Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, everybody. This is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And hello, everybody. Welcome along. Cricket Badger podcast time. And one with a slight difference. We've been going all Cricket World Cup just recently. But pleased to say, joined by Max Weller with me today. And Max, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, nice to be on. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to run you through the 20 questions. Also going to ask you a little bit about your testimonial as well. And the and various things about retirement as well from cricket, various things like that. But before we do, I'm going to just play this little video because this is where I during lockdown in COVID, people were doing all sorts of different weird things, weren't they? And you created a few videos that had me quite fascinated, to be honest. Anyway, here's 50 seconds of you doing a few things with tea bags and various things.
It's that Badger style.
And a nice little leggy to finish with. It's straight into the cup. First question with that is, obviously we all had a lot of time, didn't we, on our hands during that period. How many takes did it take you to do some of those?
Yeah, so I kept preaching the one take wallah, but that was hashtag a lot throughout. But yeah, realistically, the tea bags all over the floor, a lot of mess. A few of them did take like 20 minutes repetitive, just constant takes. There's like three tea bags in three different cups. It was just impossible, nine impossible. I thought it was. It's one of those ones like Dude Perfect. There's a few guys on YouTube that do sort of similar things, like getting CDs in CD players from 20 meters away. So that sort of stuff just takes time. It's just honestly persistence. And what better time in lockdown to do it? You got so much time on your hands.
Well, you spent your time doing that. I spent my time doing podcasts because it was a great time to get in touch with people because I had loads of time to talk to you. But we'll move on and let's get on to the 20 questions. And the first one, Max, is why cricket? What was it about the sport that made you love it? What kept you hooked throughout your career? What is it about cricket that reeled you in?
I think first and foremost, family. I think my brothers played it. My dad got me into it. He's an MCC member. School did it. I love playing all sports at school, but I was quite good at cricket at quite a young age. I think that gave me a more opportunity, and then progressing there when I started buying leg spin, actually kind of, I think it was 11 or 12, I actually got more opportunity, and people always wanted a leg spin in the team even that age, because I think Warren was just coming on the scene, or we'd been around for a few years and it was like a fashionable thing. Kind of bowling leg spin, it's exciting, it's good to watch, and that's I guess why I've always loved it.
What sort of drew you to leg spin? Did you kind of pick it up one day and thought, I can give it a twirl?
Yeah, I spotted these phantom in-swingers that didn't do anything. And by the end of my career, I actually bowled phantom in-swingers, didn't do anything as well. But in between there, yeah, bowled a few leg spinners in the garden and just by chance, really, more than anything, just, yeah, messing around. And, oh, that's actually okay. Can I persist with that for a bit? And did it quite a young age, and spent a lot of time bowling in the nets. And yeah, I kind of guessed got control from the amount I bowled.
If not a cricketer, what would you have done with your life instead?
Something sporty, probably golf, I think. I don't know if I've been good enough to be a professional golfer, but I'd definitely a golf pro or a teaching pro or something involved in golf.
Well, across your social media, there's a lot of golf stuff, and the golf did play a part in the teabag things as well, didn't it? So tennis, badminton, golf, and whatever else you could get your hands on during lockdown, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Creative. I'm fairly creative, to be fair. Maybe art. I'll do some art as well. So, yeah, maybe something to do with art as well.
Who has been the biggest influence on your cricket career?
Good question, I think. At Somerset, probably Justin Langer. When I first got into the team, he's on the game, my first opportunity. I'd say Justin as captain had quite a big impact. He was someone I obviously watched growing up on the TV, and then having the likes of him and Marcus in the dressing room when I first came in was pretty impactful. Probably those two, but probably Langer because he was captain at the time, and he desperately wanted a leg spin in his team, having played so long with Shane Warne. So I just happened to come around the right time and got that opportunity from him.
Quite a dressing room that, isn't it? I mean, just Scoffley, Kim, an absolute legend. Justin Langer, an absolute legend. That's some dressing room to move into.
For sure, yeah. Like I say, it's a bit surreal, actually, when I was 19. You just kind of crack on and do as well as you can do and focus on your own game. But actually having that experience and that level of player in the dressing room quite quickly after the 2005 Ashes, probably the most captivating series of all time, was pretty special, for sure.
He always strikes me, I've never met Justin Langer, but he always strikes me as quite an intense individual. He's got those burning eyes, isn't he? Which, but he obviously really cares about the game as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, he definitely is intense. There's no argument about that. He's super intense, but he's also very caring. He actually wrote me a letter when I left. I asked for a few words of like advice written down from him, things to work on. I was only a young player at the time, my first year playing. I think it was in the Champions League out in India when they used to do the Champions League T20 competition. It was after one of the days playing. I said, can you write a few things down for me to work on before you go back to Australia? Next morning, he gave me a letter, like handwritten, two pages of A4. Just in-depth detail about what he thought my career was, how it was going to pan out, how things to work on to ensure that I had a long career in the game and achieved what I wanted to achieve. So, yeah, he's like super caring as well. So that's why, I say really impactful.
Have you still got that letter?
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's actually published in my testimonial brochure. I've kept the letter, handwritten letter. It's pretty special. I've got it framed, actually.
What's been the best moment in cricket? If you could, if I could take you back to any 24 hours in your cricketing career, so you could relive it again and have the same highs again, where would you go?
I think probably my first class debut, because cricket, being a professional cricketer was everything I wanted to do. And actually playing four-day cricket was probably when I first started playing cricket, I wanted to achieve. I played Test cricket. That's what I saw on TV. That's what I watched Channel 4, Shane Warne bowling. That's what I wanted to achieve. So on the field, probably the first class debut, receiving my cap. That's a pretty special moment for me. And then probably the moment I'd like to have again would be the bowling in the middle with Shane Warne at the Oval during the Ashes lunch break. I did a masterclass with Warne. Just having that time again was pretty special. I know he's not here now, but just the stuff I picked up and actually never wrote down and have copy of. So a lot of it's just been sifted way back here somewhere that I can't actually recall too much of it. But the time spent with him for a couple of hours just chatting through cricket, watching the Test match was pretty surreal. And learn a huge amount in that period of time. I'd love to have that moment again, just to be able to have that information again, I guess.
He was rather good, wasn't he? Just talking as well, I was watching Rashid Khan bowling just before I came on to you as well. There's been some serious leg spinners in the recent times, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. It's popular, isn't it? It's very successful in white ball cricket. Seems to be less so in the longer format, but actually in the shorter format seems to be where wrist spin's really dominated the last 10 years.
When they brought T20 in, I think the kind of general school of thought was that spin was going to be cannon fodder and it was going to have to be quick and to trouble the batters. But it's been far from that, hasn't it? I mean, you've obviously benefited from being a spinner in T20. If you've got guile and you've got skill and you can have some variations, you can really cause some trouble in the short format.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the lack of pace potentially is why spinners have been successful, but wrist spin more the ability to spin the ball both ways, I think that causes batters problems. Especially if difficult to pick, I think because you only have to turn the ball about to it for it to be a difficult ball to hit in short. You only got to get half a bat on it and it's caught on the fence compared to the full bat and it's six. So there's small margins, I think, ability to spin the ball both ways and being using deception in that regard. I think, why wrist spin predominantly is dominated the shortest form.
You mentioned maybe not quite so much so in Red Bull, but I still think if you're a quality spinner, you're going to get test wickets.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just think it's less and less common. I think people are, if bowling wrist spin now, they go down the white ball route because it's quick success. Whereas it's being a leg break bowler in test cricket, it's a tough skill. You've got to be. It's probably the most skillful thing to be able to do is bowling wrist spin in Red Bull cricket because control's got to be good. The ability to get good players out, the way people play spin nowadays compared to how they used to play spins, chalk and cheese, I think. It's just a different skill set required. And it's just so hard to do that it's few and far between. I don't know many good wrist spinners in the long format of the game at the moment.
I asked you about your good day. If there was a worst day, if there's one moment in your career that you really would like to just wipe from the copybook and not live again, where would you go with that?
It'd be a qualifying game, T20 game at Taunton against Middlesex. I bowled an absolute howler of three overs. I actually took a fantastic catch that night, but that's kind of marred by the way I bowled. So, probably that evening. Just not, my body wasn't doing what I was telling it to do, and kind of, I guess they call that the kind of yips, but I don't really like thinking it's the yips, but just definitely not releasing the ball. How it didn't come in my hand how I wanted it to, and it was pretty looking back on some of those deliveries were pretty awful. So that probably an evening to forget. Well, hopefully, if I could have relived it and fixed it, I would have, yeah, for sure.
Everybody has good days and bad days, but if you're a spinner or any bowler really in T20, particularly when you've got Chris Gayle or Henrik Claassen or somebody at the other end who's just basically intent on smacking you as far as they can, if you get off to a good start, I'd imagine you gain momentum in a positive way. If you get off to a bad start, it's hard to haul it back.
Yeah, I think so. I think the mindset of a spin bowler in T20 cricket is really important. I think everyone knows they're going to, especially playing at small grounds like Taunton on good wickets, you're going to get hit for six. It's about the next ball. It's about how can I win this over back? How can I win that next moment, whether it's the next ball or just, I guess, making the game more simplified by just ball by ball rather than dwelling on what's happened previously or getting excited about what's to come. I think, yeah, staying present in T20 cricket, especially, I think any format of cricket, but especially T20 cricket when the ball's flying everywhere. Kind of have a more defensive mindset. I think you see bowlers come to Taunton and actually spinners get taken down and they don't really know what to do. Whereas if you look at people that have been successful there, a bowl quite defensive mindset and actually ones are really good. And people that go for the less boundaries generally will come out on top because that's how you build pressure at Taunton going for singles because run rates are generally high at those sort of grounds. So having a more defensive mindset and being okay with going for singles.
You mentioned fielding in the catch you took on a bad day with the ball, but your fielding was big part of your game, wasn't it, as well? You kind of had an extra string to your bow.
For sure. I think being a number 11 batsman, you've got to be able to do something else other than bowl. So, yeah, I think I always love fielding. Talk about what going into cricket, actually. I always love fielding. I want the ball to come to me all the time. So I was very lucky with that, I think. Just real passion for fielding and loved being out there. Want to take catch, want to be in the hot spots and having the ball come to me. I think that was just, I've always had that and fortunate to be able to apply that into my game.
Well, this is the Cricket Badger podcast. I often ask people, are you a cricket badger? I mean, cricket badger, because Australians call it a cricket nuffy, a cricket tragic, whatever you want it to be. Somebody that's kind of just deep seeped in the game. Would you describe that as how you are? Are you somebody that really kind of lives the stats? Because from people I've met, there's almost two types of people. There's some cricketers who are cricket tragics, and there are some cricketers who, as soon as they take the whites off, they're away and they couldn't care less.
No, I'm a badger. I'm a full-on badger. Black and white striped, I am full-on badger. No, I love cricket stats. I always knew what my coming rate was, always, and it was generally pretty good for a spin bowl at Taunton. When you do well, you like to know how well you're doing. And I think stats is part of that. Definitely, it's not a be-all and end-all, but it's definitely immeasurable in cricket. Definitely played a part. I like knowing how opposition were doing as well. I like knowing about batters, where they scored their runs. And so I did quite a lot of analysis stuff as well as gut feel and experienced.
Who was your hero, cricket hero, when you were a kid? Was there a poster boy?
The obvious one, like Jonty Rhodes and Damien Martin as a batter. I think they were the three for me.
I was saying to somebody the other day, I was at Headingley and Damien Martin's got a double hundred. I think it was against Gloucestershire. And it was the most beautiful innings I think I've ever seen. Chanceless, everything along the ground, everything exactly between the fielders. He just hit boundary, boundary, boundary. Better than a runner ball, I think it was from memory. But never really looked like he got out of second gear. It was just ridiculous. It was just
probably didn't move his feet much either, did he?
Somebody completely in the zone, though. Just knew exactly what he was doing with every single shot he was playing. It was remarkable. If you could trade lives, Max Waller, with any current player, I'll let you have a pass player if you want to go that way. But if you could trade lives for 24 hours, you jump into their skin. So you have their life, you have their skills, you have their, well, everything about them. Who would you like to be?
That's a good question. Between two, Chris Gayle. I think the ability to hit massive sixes, look like you're in first gear the whole time, seems to be happy all the time, smiling, jovial, quite like that.
And then party all night and then do it again.
And party all night, yeah. I didn't want to bring his off the field antics into it, but yeah, for sure. And probably AB de Villiers, because he's just an absolute freak. Finds the game very, very easy and super skillful.
I think AB de Villiers would always be my answer as well. He just could do things that nobody else could do, really. Although I watched the Glenn Maxwell innings the other day and he was not too far away from that. I'm putting you in charge of world cricket for the day. There's Max Waller's on the door at the ICC. It's top deck. You can be in charge of anything you want to do. What would be the first thing you would change with the game? Anything that's frustrated you down the years, you think, oh, I'm going to change that?
Maybe the amount of short format cricket's played, actually. I think it's having an impact on the longer form. So I probably reduce the amount of franchise competitions, so you've only got the very top players involved in the franchises, rather than having three different franchise competitions at the same time, and you get a diluted quality of the tournaments, and then it actually does have a knock-on effect to the longer form. I'll probably say that, reduce the amount of short format cricket, which I doubt probably anyone would have thought I'd have said, but definitely.
Well, you're a man off my own heart there, because I've been banging on about that. I just kind of think sometimes T20 came in because it was different and it was bite size and it was fun and it was almost throwaway. And now it's every single day. And you get the same players, but just in a different venue, wearing a different kit, almost playing with the same teammates half the time. And it's hard to sometimes differentiate. And there's kind of the jeopardy or the kind of the uniqueness of it disappears.
Agreed.
Yeah. What about the 100? Because I don't like the 100, but I imagine you may have a different answer to that.
No, I think having a tournament in England that's better quality than the Blast, because there's less teams, so you get the best of the best playing against each other, I think is powerful. I think that's only good for English cricket. Does it need to be 100 ball? That's probably my only caveat to that. Could you invest that money into a stronger Blast competition potentially? But I think that England needed a franchise competition to compete with the likes of India and Australia and those tournaments that are really successful. So it did need its own franchise competition. Just don't know what it looked like. So that's probably my answer to that. I think I like the idea of a franchise competition in this country. Just whether it's 100 balls is up for debate, definitely.
If you were starting your career again, there's a little Max Waller. Is there anything you would do differently? What advice would you give the young you? And would the little kid be proud of what you achieve in the sport? If he could look forward, would he be happy with what you got out of it?
I'll answer the second part of that first. I think the little kid, yeah, the longevity of my career, absolutely. Obviously, I'd like to play international cricket. That was a goal of mine. So I think he'd be a little bit happy with the longevity I've had in cricket. 15-year career is pretty good in any sport. But would he have liked me to play for England? For sure. So a bit 50-50 there. And then what would I have told myself? I think the key thing would be get better at what I was good at rather than trying to change my game too much. So actually what I was good at was being pretty accurate as a spin bowler and just bowled two deliveries, really, a leg spinner and a googly, and bowled them with good control.
Yeah.
But I was kind of ahead of my time in the fact that T20 cricket wasn't that prevalent. And if I'd done what I was doing at a higher speed, it'd be more like Rashid Khan or Leggy, that's that sort of bowler, and actually would have been really effective. Whereas a lot of information given to me was, you've got to bowl a big leg break, you want to be successful in the game, you've got to bowl a big leg break like Shane Warne and be that sort of leg spin. Actually, I was probably more style-wise, more like a Kumble than a Warne. I was probably like at the bat a bit more, less spin, but quite accurate and good pace. Whereas I tried to be slower and spin it more like a Parkinson or that style leg spinner that actually wasn't necessarily my strongest suit. I spent so much time doing it. Actually, if I spent that time just bowling what I was doing quicker, higher pace, I'd have been far more effective. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest bit of information I give myself.
It interests me, actually. I never bowled spin. I was always a medium pace, dibbly dobbly, cannon fodder bowler at club cricket. But the you hear a lot of people talk about Matt Parkinson needs to bowl quicker, or Rashid Khan's bowling at this kind of pace. Adil Rashid slowed down for this Cricket World Cup kind of stuff. How easy is it as a spinner to change your pace and to suddenly bowl, I don't know, 6 miles an hour faster than you used to? Surely your action changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's tough to do it with the same control, that's for sure. And I have the same shape on the ball. I think that's what every spinner's striving for is bowling at the highest pace they possibly can with shape, good shape on the ball and ability to spin it. So there's always an optimum pace. But I'd say changing pace is to do with action. Yeah, definitely for sure. Front arm, strength, power, and potentially sometimes speed and run up. But you don't want to lose what you've got. So someone like Parkinson bowls with great shape on the ball, spins the ball miles. If he bowled it quicker, would he lose potentially some of his strengths? Potentially. Mm. So it's a real tough one that some people have a natural pace as well. The things you can tinker with, and you can maybe change a couple of mile an hour here and there. But to add 6 mile an hour, 7 mile an hour, you're gonna have to change a lot of your bowling style. So I think it's difficult to add a significant amount of pace for sure.
This is the Cricket Badger podcast. We are sponsored by manscaped.com. So we're going to take a very short break. And off the back of this, we'll come back and talk to Matt Swallower about his testimonial year.
My name is Jacob, and I sent the Badger a message. And now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls.
A big thank you to manscaped.com for their sponsorship of the Cricket Badger podcast. If you quote Badger with any order off at manscaped.com, you get 20% off and free shipping. So fill your boots. It's good stuff. We have got a question in from Bulldozer Williams. Hello, Bulldozer. And he says, Rashid Khan is a phenomenal player, and I'm glad he is signed to both the Adelaide Strikers and the New York franchise, two teams he follows, he says. I mean, we mentioned Rashid Khan a second ago, Max, but he is an absolute wizard, isn't he? When he's on song, he can do things I think probably very few leg spinners can do.
Yeah, he's unique. He's got a very unique action. I don't think many people, like you say, can do what he can do. He does it at such a high pace. He's very accurate, and he's got subtle variations. So it makes him an absolute nightmare for batters to face. And he's on those wickets that help him that skid on quickly. He's even more dangerous.
I'm going to rearrange, because we got halfway through the 20 questions here. I'm going to rearrange them a little bit because I want to talk about your testimonial. But the question I'm going to kind of come to here is what will you be doing in 10 years' time? Because obviously, retirement, and very few, other than sports people, very few people retire in their either late 20s or mid 30s, whatever it is. You suddenly maybe have to reassess who you are and what you're going to do next.
No, obviously I'm very content with my decision to retire. I've gone straight into a coaching role down at Exeter University. I'm working with Somerset Academy on the fielding and the fielding with the Western Storm, the women's team. So I'm busy coaching already. I've gone straight into that and kind of had that lined up. long term, I want to be a fielding coach. I want to go around. I talked about franchise cricket earlier. I want to try and go around as many franchises as possible and have an impact in those teams. I think it's something that's going to take time, but it's definitely something that I aspire to be as good a coach as I can be, I guess.
Well, James Foster on the podcast a couple of years ago, and he was talking about exactly the same thing. And then every time I turn the telly on, he's in a different dugout doing a coaching job with somebody else. So it's certainly possible to get yourself on the franchise circuit. Was it always going to be cricket then as post-career? There wasn't anything else?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's having spent so long in the professional game and still love cricket, even though I don't enjoy playing anymore, I actually still love the game. Very passionate about, like I say, about the fielding side of it. I watch a lot of cricket anyway, so I think it was something I feel like I could offer a lot and give back. I think staying in the game was always a given.
And Bulldoze has added on as well. He says, Max, is there anything you would have liked to achieve in cricket that you didn't get a chance to?
I think timing is always what people say when they finish playing, actually timing of their career. I think if you speak to someone like Viv Richards, how much money he made playing franchise cricket around the world, or even people later on, like people like Ian Blackwell down at Somerset, how much money he'd have made playing franchise cricket, you'd have seen. So I think if I had my career a little bit later, I'd have done very well out of the franchise game. I'd like to think I'd have done well out of the franchise game. But I think playing international cricket was obviously the pinnacle when I was growing up. So, any format, just representing England would have been a lovely thing to be able to do.
And your testimonial year in 2023 from Somerset, as you say, a long career at Somerset, rewarded for that with some events that you've got planned. What is there on the horizon with that? How's the year going? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's just stressful, actually. It's a lot to organise, a lot to help behind the scenes with. Got committed together, put on events throughout the year. It's coming to the end of the year now. I've got one more event at Lord's, which is quite a nice place to have a closing dinner. So I've got that coming up in the middle of December, on the 14th of December, having an event in the Long Room at Lord's. It's pretty rare that you get to experience it and dine at Lord's. So it's an opportunity to do that and have a three-course meal and usual raffle auction stuff. And I've got Jack Leach and Marcus Truscothic from Somerset coming to support that and do Q&As and be around and stuff. So that's nice.
Yeah. And how do people find out about that? If they want to book in and get a ticket for Lords,
directly or there's a website, www.maxwtestimonial.co.uk or email info@maxwtestimonial.co.uk either of those routes will get you to the right person who can book you in. But it'd be great to have your support if you enjoy your cricket, and like I said, it's a pretty unique experience to have dinner in the Long Room at Lord's and be around some former and current England players. So
I could see the cogs in your brain going there as you were trying to remember your details, but you got there. Let's go back to the 20 questions then, and the next one is, if you could meet, Ashley, and they say all rock stars want to be sportsmen and vice versa. If you could have been famous doing something completely different, what would you have liked to have done?
Yeah, musician, definitely, for sure. be part of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's my go-to band. Be part of the Chili Peppers, playing concerts. That'd be pretty special.
Would you have been Flea with your shirt off, strutting around?
Not with this rig, but yeah, I'd have been a drummer, I think, hiding behind the scenes, but yeah, drumming for sure.
If you could meet anybody, living or dead, it's kind of the old dinner party question, who would you like to meet? I'll give you three. You've done your cooking, you've got three places set. Who's going to come and sit around the table with you?
Tiger Woods, Muhammad Ali, and Jimmy Carr.
Okay, that'd be quite interesting. Jimmy Carr and Muhammad Ali and Tiger Woods all together. Jimmy Carr would add the, we'll probably take it to the edge, wouldn't it? And maybe get thumped by Muhammad Ali halfway through.
He'd go past the edge, I'm pretty sure.
But that'd be good. Who would play you in the movie about your life? They're making one of the movie. Who's going to take on the lead role?
Matthew McConaughey or Owen Wilson, they're the two.
Right.
Either of those two.
Is that because they've got a passing resemblance to you or because you like them as actors?
Just like them as actors, I think.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you can see a little bit of both of them in you. You're not a spitting image, but there is a little bit of both.
Okay, fair. Yeah, slight resemblance, but no, not that's not why. I like both as actors for me.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's the last time you can remember feeling really nervous? As a cricketer, Max, were you somebody that got the old butterflies before a match or before an innings or before getting your first bowl in a match, or did you just take it in your stride?
I was quite lucky I opened the bowling quite a lot, actually, so I got into the game quite quickly. As if I looked around the dressing room, I'd probably be average for nerves and excitement for the game. I do everything pretty quickly, so I'd probably come across that I'm quite nervous before I when I'm actually inside, I'm actually okay. It's just my natural pace of doing things. I'm very quick. Quick doing everything, to be honest. So I think the most nervous I've been recently is doing a public speaking. I said do something on myself at school and talking in front of a couple of people. I find that really uncomfortable. So that's probably the most nervous, actually. More nervous doing things I'm not comfortable doing. I think when I've got the ball in my hand, I feel like I'm in control. When I'm speaking about myself, I'm not as in control. So I think I'm more comfortable playing the game.
Out of your comfort zone with the public speaking.
Yeah, for sure.
What is the top item on your bucket list, things to do before you die? I mean, hopefully that's a long time away. You've got plenty of time to fit these things in. But if you could achieve one thing before you pop your clogs, what would you do?
I want to visit Hawaii. I think Hawaii is a place for a bucket list kind of destination. And then the other thing would be going to watch the Masters at Augusta.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's on quite a few people's list, that the Augusta Masters. For 4 days walking around that place would be amazing, wouldn't it?
For sure.
In terms of iconic venues, that is right up there, isn't it? On a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Fonz in Happy Days, but he was as cool as you could get. You know, he used to kind of smash onto the jukebox and change the record and stuff. He could do anything. A scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being me and 10 being the Fonz, where are you on the coolness radar?
Generally, or
how would you rate yourself as cool?
Everyone likes to think they're cool, don't they? So I'd like to rate myself a 9, but realistically, I'm probably like a 5 or a 6.
I mean, that's still decent. If you had a time machine, Max, and you could go anywhere, you could go forwards, you can go backwards, you can take it anywhere. I've just delivered it outside of your place there. Where would you take it?
I think I'd like to experience the 70s.
All right.
No, randomly. No idea why. Or 50 years time where I can see what my kids are up to. That'd be the other place I'd take it.
Yeah. I think I'd be quite nervous going forwards with the way the world is these days. You wonder what you're going to come into, wouldn't you? But 70s. We will book you in for the 70s. You can go there. If you could have a second home anywhere in the world, I mean, cricketers are very lucky. You get to travel a little bit. Is there anywhere you'd like to have a second place, spend a bit more time?
Yeah, hands down, Cape Town. That's the easiest question ever. That's the easiest question of the lot so far. Cape Town, for sure. I spent a lot of time over there in the winters playing cricket over there. And it became a second home anyway, to be honest. I would like to live there full time, just political side of things in South Africa is not where I'd enjoy being full time, but for sure to visit for 6 months of the year would be unbelievable.
I mean, I went out to South Africa when Yorkshire qualified for the Champions League back in 2012. And I remember being in the back of a taxi, the windows down. It was a lovely hot day. And you could see kind of Cape Town. You could see the sea, Robben Island in the distance. You've got Table Mount on the other side. It is a fantastic place. It's basically whatever you want to do there, you can do, can't you? It's a lovely
exactly
place.
Right. Yeah. Whatever you're interested in, the animals, being outside, doing sport, eating nice food, drinking nice alcohol. There's so much to do, so many things to see. It's fantastic. Covers all bases.
We've got two questions left, Max. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would you change?
that's a goodie. I think, you know, I said about being quick doing everything I do, actually probably taking my time a little bit more, being a bit more patient at times, being more considered. I think that would help me, especially my coaching journey, going into my coaching. I think that's going to help massively, being more patient. I think that's probably one thing that's naturally ingrained in me, actually, that I have to consciously think about doing. So yeah, probably a bit more patient, I'd say.
How have you found the coaching and the move into that? I mean, I take it you've done a little bit of coaching before you finished anyway, but how do you find that in terms, because obviously as a player, you're in charge of your own destiny to some extent, aren't you? You go out there, you perform, if you're prepared well enough, you're giving yourself a real chance. But obviously once you've passed on your words of wisdom to a player that isn't you, kind of you're reliant on them going out there and doing it their way.
Yeah, it's, you definitely get a different gratification. I think the quicker you can learn that it's not about you anymore, I think the better it is. I think it's quite a selfish thing being a player, even though it's a team sport. It's actually how you do individually, and I think that impacts how the team does. But I think as a coach, it's all about the people you're coaching. It's all about the players you're working with. So it's just getting your head around the fact that it's not about you anymore. As the quicker you can do that, I think as a coach, the better placed you are. I really enjoy it not being about me anymore. I've had so much time where it's all been about me actually taking that stress off, I guess, and trying to take the stress off the people I'm working with. I think that's the thing that I enjoy most actually about it. So I've transitioned, like I say, quite contently. Yeah. I think it's very different when you're playing and coaching to when you stop playing completely and now you're fully focused on being the best coach you can be. I think that's a very different thing as well. So I'm very content with that decision I made, and I'm really enjoying it.
This is episode number 555, I think, of the Cricket Badger podcast. We had a few coaches down the episodes on here, and talking to them, a lot of them say, you know, obviously there's the skills and that part of the coaching role, but actually having that one-on-one kind of relationship with the player and getting inside their head and trying to help them as human beings as well to understand what they need to do is a big part of it. Is that something you've come across yet?
For sure, yeah, absolutely. Everyone's different, aren't they? So everyone likes to do things different their own way, and it's trying to get the best out of each individual you're working with. So I think that's really important, understanding the individual and how they operate best. I think being really self-aware as a coach is really vitally important. And understanding how you can operate to get the best out of that individual, I think, is the biggest skill you can learn. You see how the test side are doing at the moment. McCullum just seems to give everyone a free license, and it's working with that group of players because they're all feeling comfortable, I guess, and feel like they can operate at how they want to operate and not feel under pressure or extra pressure, external pressure from the coaching or management. It's kind of like a free rein, and it's working really well.
We've seen the flip side of that in the Cricket World Cup, haven't we? The players seem to be playing a bit more fear of failure because it's not gone well.
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah, I think so. I think you're getting I think tournaments like the World Cup are very momentum based things. You get a little run and suddenly the pressure ramps up, whereas I think with a test series it's it's five games, it's, you can still have momentum shifts throughout that, but also test cricket, I think over 5 days, it's not just like one day cricket, it's just one day, it's done, whereas 5 days you still got time to get yourself back in the game. It's never done really, so I think the formats dictate that a little bit, but yeah, for sure tournaments like the World Cup, I definitely, momentum plays a huge part, and England started poorly, which then is very difficult to claw back.
I was at one stage, it looked like I might be going out to the Cricket World Cup, and I'm actually not that bothered. I didn't actually, because I'd have been following England. It might have been quite depressing, but that their route through the Cricket World Cup, Max, has been from one place to another. India is a big country as well, so it's a lot of travelling involved. That must be quite difficult for the coaching staff amongst that England squad to kind of keep people smiling, keep people positive when everybody knows inside that camp that it's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, for sure. India's a tough place to tour anywhere, I think, for any touring cricketer. So, I'm sure it is. Playing for your country is still special, though. I think whoever you are, I think you want to do as well as they can do. And I'm sure that all the players are trying their nuts off to try and make sure that they're putting the best version of themselves on the field. It just hasn't really clicked, and I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. They can't seem to put their finger on it because they'd have changed things around, and nothing's really changed. But yeah, it's a tough place to go, India, I think, as a cricketer and tour. They always talk about winning series overseas over in India is one of the hardest places to go. So I think the wickets play a part in that. the atmosphere, some of the games play a part in that, the grounds, like you say, lots of traveling, internal flights. It's just tough, just a different culture as well, isn't it? It's getting used to different cultures. I know the England boys have played a lot of the IPL cricket now, so they'll be used to that. But it's still a tough place to go. And like I say, if you're not doing well, the hotel rooms are pretty tough places to be, aren't they?
Do you think it'll have a little bit of a knock-on effect to the Test series? Because obviously in the new year, England go back to India for a 5-match Test series. Do you think there'll be a hangover from the Cricket World Cup? Or do you think they'll just wipe it clean? McCullum will come in with his different outlook and they'll have a fresh approach?
I think so. I think there's definitely enough guys that aren't in that Test squad that are coming into the Test squad, that aren't in the one-day squad that'll make it a bit of a fresher place, I guess. And like I say, the coaching and support staff. So I think hopefully doesn't have an impact, but like I said, it could do. There are some players that may find it tough, but I think there's enough new energy and fresh faces to make it a new setup.
It's going to be a tough tour, that, though. It's going to be interesting to see how England do in India on a 5-test match series. It's going to test Baz-Bull to the limit, I think, that series, isn't it? And final question, Max, it's been great to catch up with you today and to see you. If you've been me today and you've been asking you the questions, is there anything you would have asked yourself to get a great, exclusive, wonderful answer? Any questions I've missed?
Not really. Maybe like who I found it hardest to play against as a player or an opposition, maybe. I guess that's probably, otherwise you've covered most of it, to be honest, mate. You've done a good job.
Go on then, Max. I'll answer your own question. And who's been the toughest opponent?
I'd say Mark Ramprakash. Of all the players I bowled at, Mark Ramprakash seemed to have the widest bat. Every shot he hit went exactly where it was supposed to go. He must have got 70 or 80 in a one-day game for Middlesex at the end of his career, but he was still churning them out. I think it was a couple of seasons where him and Triscothic went 2,000 runs a year for 2 years in the trot or something like that. He's 40 years old, but still leading run scorer. And that season, he played a one-day game against him. I think he was at Surrey, actually, not Middlesex. And he just, everything at the end of his bat and went wherever he wanted it to go. So probably him from a learning perspective early on in my career.
He was a tremendous player. He was a perfect advert. They should have had central contracts a bit earlier, because if he'd been more settled in that England setup, I think he could have had a very, very different Test career, because he certainly had the talent. Really good player.
I think similar to Hick a little bit, wouldn't he? Him and Graham Hick probably underachieved at international level, and they're such fantastic domestic players.
In a way, it's almost gone the other way, isn't it? They've now got, they're giving them 3-year deals and things like that, and it's almost too comfy. But if you could just give them Graham Hick and Ramprakash a little bit more of a tickle on the tummy and said, you're safe in this environment, you're going to be okay, they would have probably churned out loads more runs. Maxwell, if they're going to give you one last chance, then you can, anybody that's interested in going along to your date in at Lords, 14th of December, did you say?
That's right, 14th of December, evening meal. Flat tie event. Like I said, there'll be former and current internationals there, international cricketers there, and just talking about their careers and the opportunity to have a 3-course meal in the long room at Lords is pretty rare. So yeah, it'd be great to have your support. Do get in touch, info@maxwtestimonial.co.uk. Email us there and find out more.
Brilliant. So enjoy that, because I'm sure that's going to be quite a special night for you. And hopefully the testimonial has done its job and you've enjoyed everything about it. And the 14th of December goes very well indeed for you. Triscothic and Leach as the speakers sounds quite interesting as well. So if you're a cricket fan, you don't necessarily have to be a fan of Max, really. Fan of Somerset.
No, absolutely.
If you're in London and you fancy listening to Triscothic and Leach talking about cricket, there's worse things to do on the 14th of December, I would suggest. Max, thank you very much indeed for being a guest on the Cricket Badger podcast today. It's been really good to see you.
Thanks, Sammy. Cheers.
And thank you out there, everybody, for watching. And stay tuned. We've got more stuff coming from the Cricket World Cup. We've got plenty more just around the corner. But thanks to Max again, and thanks for watching. And I am desperately trying to find my thing. Here it is. There's the overlay to say goodbye to you. Cheers, everybody. Bye.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.